So with that, I have a question for you. How's life?
Great.
Awesome. Every day's perfect, right? Every day is wonderful. You got up this morning, you were energized. You're like, I get to see Jim this morning. Oh, man. And see, people laugh when I do that. That's so funny. But when you woke up this morning, you know, were you happy to be alive? Were you excited about what's coming? I hope you were. I hope you were. But I guess the question is that does every day start out like that? Is that what it feels like every single day? I'd like to tell you it does for me, but it doesn't every day. And what's funny is that my life's pretty good. You know, I've been together with Bonnie for, gosh, how long? 28 years? You know, wow, I was younger then. Yeah. We've been together for a long time. We've got good friends. We still enjoy, spending time together. Get to be here with you guys. I love what I get to do. But life doesn't always feel fantastic to me. There are some mornings that are challenging. There are some days that are challenging. And I would imagine that's true for you as well. And so what I want to talk about today is as we kick off a new series, we've called this series First Things First. And what I want to look at throughout the series is that what are the sort of things that are going on in our lives that may be kind of pushing joy away from us? What are the priorities that we might be, what are the things that we might be prioritizing that may be pushing joy away? What are the things that are actually keeping us from kind of really making the most out of the life we'd like to have? Because sometimes things get in there and they kind of crowd us out. And I could make a list of 1,000 things that are good. And you could make a list of 1,000 things that are good. But there's one thing that's not quite what you want. How often do we look at that one thing? And if we're not careful, those things can really start to overwhelm us. Because something that most of us have gotten pretty good at in life is convincing other people that we're okay. Right? We've kind of learned, by the time you're a teenager or by the time you're an adult, you've kind of figured out how to pretend like you're okay. And you can put up a front a little bit. And as we do that, it's kind of socially acceptable to be okay. But then there's something that could start to happen. As the things in our lives that start to wear us down or start to weigh us down start to build up, we start going through a process of not just trying to convince other people that we're okay, we start trying to convince ourselves that we're okay. And what we often will do is we'll start to lean on things to try to convince ourselves we're okay, that, if I'm a really busy person, if I just stay busy enough, I'm okay. I'm a really active person. I'm engaging with lots of people. I'm an active person. I'm active enough. I'm okay. Do I have money enough? Do I talk enough? Do I look important enough? Because if I have enough, then I'm okay. So what I want to talk about today is enough is enough. Or is it? Are we trying to enough our way through life? Because the reality is that sometimes life is a lot, right? And there are times in life where the things that are building up on us are tremendous. And in those times, of course things feel overwhelming. In times of, significant illness and things like that, or significant loss, those things, of course, build up on us. But I've already admitted that my life can be just fine, yet sometimes it doesn't feel fine. And my bet is that's true for you sometimes too. That things are largely good, but I don't feel good. And again, if we're not careful, life can start to become this kind of endless struggle that without meaning to, we enter into this mode of, if I can just get through today, I'll be okay. And then you wake up tomorrow and I go, if I could just get through today, it'll be okay. And before long, that becomes years or decades, and we've started to live our lives just struggling to get through, just struggling to get to the other side. And is that the only choice that we have? Is life just one endless struggle? Just suck it up, accept it, that's just the way it is. Or is there another option? Is there a way to live our lives differently than that? Well, interestingly, Jesus seemed to think so. That the gospel writer John actually records for us this promise that Jesus makes that seems almost unimaginable. So Jesus is kind of with a crowd of people. Some of these people he's talking to are religious leaders who don't really believe in him. They're kind of, you know, calling him out, saying, you can't be the real deal. And Jesus simply says this, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Now, I've mentioned to you guys before that one of the things that I like to do is because the Bible was not originally written in English, I like to read different English translations to kind of get a broader picture. Because something that's really important to remember is that all of the Bible was written in ancient languages, languages that no one currently uses anymore. You know, so the Old Testament, lots of Hebrew, ancient Hebrew. New Testament, lots of a specific ancient Greek that was used. And so oftentimes, during the translation process, there isn't a word-for-word translation available. So each Bible translation, or I should say each Bible translation team, has specific goals. Some teams are very focused on as literal as possible. Try to capture every word as closely as you can. Other translation teams focus on, no, we want to focus on understanding. So we're going to try to capture the ideas that are there. So I find it really useful to read across multiple versions. And this particular verse is really neat to read across multiple versions because each version uses different words, but says essentially the same thing. Right, the version I have up here, the NIV, says, I've come that you would have life and have it to the full. Another version says, I've come that you would have life and have it abundantly. Yet another version says, I've come that you would have a rich and satisfying life. So that sounds like a pretty good promise. You know, whether you like an abundant life, a rich life, a satisfying life, a full life, any way you look at it, that's a pretty good deal. So where do we go from there? How do we have that sort of life? Well, again, if we kind of look at the source language a little bit, Jesus is saying something even better than that. That not only is a rich, abundant life available to us, but a very specific kind of life. Because in the version of Greek that this was recorded in, there are actually three different words for life. One word for life is the word bios, which actually means our physical life, what we generally think of as our lives. Another one is psuche. I may be blowing that ancient Greek pronunciation, but psuche is our inner life, kind of our soul and our mind. But the one that Jesus uses here is the Greek word zoe. It's actually spelled like the name Zoe, but it's zoe. And that's a divine life, an eternal life. So Jesus says that I have come to give you a God-given eternal life and have it fully and richly and abundantly. But the thing that's so important to hold on to with that is that when Jesus talks about eternal life, he's not talking about something that happens when we die. Remember that Jesus would frequently say, and it kind of confused his followers, he would say that the kingdom of heaven is near. Or even sometimes he would say the kingdom of heaven is here. And what Jesus was saying is that life, that divine life, that eternal life, you don't have to wait until you die to find it. It can start now. That we can live in a way now that taps us into that eternal existence that we have. And that's when Jesus says, a full life, a rich life, a life that is this life that carries you forward towards eternity. So that's what he promises. So as he does all that, how do we find that? How do we find that kind of life? Because it turns out that finding that kind of life is automatic. Now, we have an active role to play in it, but how can there be an active role? Because if we think about the promise of Jesus and the promise of what we call salvation, right, eternity with God, that's something we get by faith. Right? There's no act of action to get there, that when we put our faith in Jesus, that's what we find. But I put my faith in Jesus many years ago, and I can tell you that huge portions of my life were not full. We're not tapping into my eternal existence. So what else is there? There must be something else. There must be something we have to do. Well, Jesus gives us some insight on why we can put our faith in him, but still not find those sort of things. And he actually says it as part of this statement. Because before he says this, he says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." The point that Jesus is making here is that there's some kind of tension at work in our lives. That, yes, there is a path that leads to this full, abundant life, but it has to involve something more than just believing. And as he's saying these sort of things, he's talking to these religious leaders who don't believe in him. They are convinced that he is not who he says he is, that he is not the Son of God. So part of the point that he is making when he says, yeah, I'm the one who's come to give this sort of life, is, yes, you need to believe in me. But when he talks about the thieves, what he's saying is that there are things that are trying to draw you away from finding that life. Now, in the first century, when Jesus was making this statement, for decades before that, there had been a number of people who had come along and a number of religious leaders and said that, hey, I am the Messiah. Because remember that the ancient Jewish people were looking for a Messiah for, you know, literally millennia sort of thing. And many people had come up and done that and said that. But they always fell through. And so people who had followed them and who believed in them when they weren't real thought they were finding life. But the thing that they thought was giving them life was actually drawing them away from life. And I think the thing that we can take from that in the time that we live in is there are things in our lives that we believe are going to give us life, are the things that we can lean on and give us meaning and purpose and tap into this eternal existence, or at least the thing I can lean on. The thing we can take away is that those things aren't real for us either. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't things that aren't important. But when we lean on things other than our relationship with God, when we lean on things other than our relationship with Jesus, if we put too much value on those, too much importance on those, they start to become our priority. And we start to focus on those things instead of the sort of things that Jesus is leading us to, the sort of things that Jesus calls us to. And to make this point, Jesus will then go on to use an example that would have been incredibly familiar to his first century audience. And it's certainly an example, if you've been in church for any length of time, you're familiar with. Jesus refers to himself as what? A shepherd. Right? He's a shepherd. Which also means that I'm a sheep, which doesn't really feel like a compliment, to be honest. Right? Sheep kind of blindly follow. So sometimes, you know, it's not an ideal analogy, but that's the one that Jesus uses, that he is the shepherd, and I'm a sheep, and you're a sheep. And as Jesus goes through and he uses these examples, he lays out something that's not immediately clear to us. Now, in my own mind, when I think about someone being a shepherd, my thought is that, well, the shepherd just takes care of the sheep all the time. But it turns out that there were other people who would help. Right? If a herd is large enough, you're going to need other people who come in and help. And those are hired hands. And so what Jesus does is he actually says that, well, I'm the shepherd, but there are other things that might interact here. And they're going to interact differently than I do. Because Jesus goes on to say, I am the good shepherd. The shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Now, one thing Jesus is doing here is he's actually predicting his own death. He's saying that, you know, he's pointing towards the crucifixion, that I'm going to die to give you life. So one of the things that Jesus is saying here is that I, the shepherd, I am the life giver. I am the one who gives you that life that's full and meaningful. But then he continues and he says, The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So he's comparing this idea of a shepherd and a hired hand, that on the outside, they may look like they do the same thing. They both take care of the sheep. Right? There are certainly things in our lives that take care of us. But when things go wrong, the hired hand is going to behave very differently than the shepherd. Because Jesus says, so when the hired hand sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep. He runs away. The wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. Now, as I hear that, when I first heard that many years ago, I'm like, well, the hired hand's evil. He's terrible. He's a terrible person. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. But I don't think that's the point that Jesus is making. The hired hand's not evil. The hired hand played a role in taking care of the sheep. But the role that he plays is not the same role that the shepherd plays. For the shepherd, the sheep belong to him. He will give everything to care for them. The hired hand fills a need, provides value, but is not the life giver. And I think we have lots of examples of that sort of thing in our lives. I mean, we all need money, right? Money has value. You know, we all work. I like to be successful. I like chasing success. I like pursuing success. Are those things evil? Is money evil? Is work evil? Is pursuing success evil? No, it's a meaningful part of life. But if we lean heavily on money and we feel our life revolves around money, our life revolves around our work, our life revolves around success, and we pursue those things at all costs, that means we start prioritizing things that are supposed to be part of our lives, not the priority in our lives. Because our priority needs to be our relationship with God and the people in our lives, and reaching out into the people in our lives. I mean, just to, for example, at one point in my life, before I was a minister, when I still had my own business, I went months at a time where I spent less than 24 hours a week at home. That I would fly out to the West Coast on a Sunday morning. I would take a red eye back on a Friday night that would get me home about 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon, and I would do it again the next day. So literally, I would spend more time on an airplane than I spent with my wife, counting the time I'm asleep. That wasn't healthy for my relationship, right? It wasn't healthy for my life. It wasn't healthy for me. But I felt like I had to pursue success that hard that I couldn't let that one job go. I couldn't skip that one week. Something was supposed to be part of my life had become my life. And I think that's something that we all want to be open to. That something that's supposed to be part of our lives doesn't become our life. Because what's going to happen is we're going to lean on those things harder and harder. And then one day they're not going to be there. For all I did, all the work I did back then, you know what's true now? Somebody else is doing it. So it turns out I was not indispensable as much as I thought I was. And that's true for all of us, right? Outside of our families, right? Outside of our relationship with God, whatever you do, no matter how well you do it, no matter how important you feel you are, eventually somebody else is going to do it. So keep those things in balance. And please hear me, I am not finger wagging. I admitted my own first, and I only told you one of them, sort of thing. So what Jesus is saying is that, yes, there are lots of things in our lives that are important, but know that they're important, but they're not the priority. Because Jesus is saying that as long as those things are the priority, you're not going to find that Zoe kind of life, that stepping into your eternal existence today and tapping into that and living in the fullness of that. And if you've ever met someone or known someone who's done that, who's somehow is almost otherworldly, where they just have this incredibly deep care for other people, the ability to tune out the noise in the world, and stay focused on their relationship with people, they're guiding by God. Those people are just different. And we can often say that, well, that's just their thing. They're just special. And yes, they are special, but that same specialness is available to you. It's available to me. And that's the promise that Jesus is telling us here, that there is a way to live in that kind of fullness. So what do we have to do to get there? How do we find that in our lives? Well, Jesus tells us. So he starts out by saying that, okay, to find that kind of life, there are kind of two parts to it. So Jesus says, the sheep listen to the shepherd's voice. He calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. So the sheep listen, they hear, they believe. So part of finding this kind of life is belief, that we do want to put our faith in Jesus, put our faith that he is who he says he is. That is a really, really important part of finding this. But it's only part. And the thing is that it's only part, but I think it's the part that people sometimes stop at. I will tell you that in part of my life, I had stopped at that point. That there was a point in my life where I had tremendous faith in Jesus, but I didn't understand that there was more to do. That there was more that I needed to do. There was a different mindset that I had to adopt if I was going to find this kind of life, or at least progress into this sort of life. Because Jesus explains that beyond the hearing, the listening, the believing, the sheep do something else. It says, when the shepherd has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. So what did the sheep do when they heard his voice? They followed. That's the piece that I think many of us struggle with. That we believe, and believing is important, but we also want to follow. That when Jesus leads us and calls us in a direction, that we take a step in that direction. I mean, imagine if the sheep are all in the pen and they hear the voice of the shepherd. He talks to them and gets them all pumped up and they're all excited. And he walks out the gate and says, come on, sheep. And they all just lay down and go, well, that was a great sermon. Thanks for that, shepherd. I'm just going to stay here, though. I'm comfortable. Jesus called them to follow. To hear him, to do as he guides them to do. That's the key, that we want to believe and follow. That if we want to find a life that fills our hearts, that fills our souls, in a way that the things that we have been leaning on do not fill our hearts and souls, we need to believe, but we need to follow. We need to take action. And the thing is that this is a lifelong journey. I mean, I don't know that I know anyone who has arrived. In fact, I doubt there is anyone who's actually arrived kind of other than Jesus. And that's important to understand because this idea of being on a journey, of hearing Jesus calling us and putting our faith in him and then following him, you know, it's kind of an up and down journey. Right? It's something we go through throughout our entire lives that we sometimes are doing really well at it. There are times when our faith and our belief are really strong and we're really moved to action and we're doing things that really fill our souls. But then there are other times where that starts to fall apart a little bit and we start to beat ourselves up for that. And I want to ask you not to do that. To, you know, when it's happening, recognize that it's happening. You know, look into why it's happening. But do not beat yourself up over it. You will go through that over and over again. That this journey towards a life like Jesus describes is not a straight line. I wish it was a straight line, but it's not. And it may be a little zigzag, it may be a little stumble forward, stumble backward sort of thing. And that's okay. Because the thing that we want to understand is that we're not pursuing success in the classic sense, that we're actually pursuing transformation. And when something is transformed, it's transformed by what it encounters, right? The pressures, the forces around us. So when we're pursuing transformation of ourselves, the mistakes we make are part of what transform us. The things we do well transform us as well. And we go through this ongoing journey of just, you know, stepping out, getting it wrong, trying again, maybe take a break for a minute, try again. Those are the things that transform us. One of the things that someone told me years ago that I repeat to myself often, we get very focused on what we do. I did this, I did this, that, I achieved that thing over there. God is a lot less concerned about what you do. He's far more concerned about who you become, the person that you become. But here's the thing. The things you do influence who you become. So it's not just to sit back and do nothing. You got to do something. You got to go forward. You got to answer his call to follow. But it's not about achieving some milestone that you have chosen. It's about being present and doing the things that he calls you to do, stepping out into those things, knowing you will never arrive this side of heaven. You will never arrive. And you will fall down, and you will stumble, and you will make mistakes. But if you're following Jesus, if you're investing in the people around you, if you're hearing him as he guides you to step out into that thing that scares you to death, you know, like shut down your business and go into ministry, right? You follow him into these things. It scares you to death. But he shows up, and he transforms you. And he extends that to all of us, no matter where we are in life. Whether we're younger, whether we're older, what we're facing, what we're dealing with, there is always this call to follow. So the question I'll leave us all with is, where is Jesus calling you to follow him today? It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be scary. It might be. But whatever he's calling you towards is important. And whatever he's calling you towards will make a difference in someone else's life, and it will transform you. And we'll move you one step closer to that fullness of life that Jesus promises.